Can we talk about bronze to mythic?
No.
Okay, next question. How do you keep things fresh?
That's not a question I was prepared to answer for this interview.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to not just another episode of Lords of Limited. This is the Paternity / Wedding Chronicles episode number one. We'll get into what that is in just a second. My name is Ben Warney. Joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Rewrite History Sachs. That is a Marvel card. Previews are out right now. We're not really rewriting history. We're rewriting the future. Some Doctor Strange stuff is definitely happening here for sure.
That is true. This is a good time for us to tap in. We haven't really, we've done this for IPs in the past. I have been rereading The Hobbit with Jonah, and I'm hoping to finish it by the time Hobbit is out. So I'm hoping to be the Hobbit expert. I know you're a Lord of the Rings fan as well, but hoping to be our Hobbit expert on the pod for, you know, do these cards cut the mustard? But where are we at with the Marvel stuff? What's your Marvel universe, interest, life, lore, comic book guy? Where are you at?
Definitely not a comic book guy. So yeah. I cannot have any sort of street cred there. I mean, my connection with Marvel is largely through the movies. I mean, like Iron Man, Avengers, Black Panther, etc. So I mean, I know the IP well because I've watched almost every blockbuster Marvel movie there is. But would not consider myself a huge Marvel fan, but as I look through, I mean, like, see Tony Stark, I see the Mind Stone, I see whatever. I know about half of the cards. Like, I don't know who Namor the Submariner is. I'm just scrolling Scryfall right now. I would say I am more connected to Marvel than Final Fantasy, for example, but less connected than Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I basically saw most Marvel movies pre-Avengers, the first Avengers, and then fell off pretty rapidly after that. X-Men was my thing as a kid. I was hoping for more X-Men cards in this set. I know we've gotten a Storm or two, and I would definitely vibe out with a full-on X-Men set. We're in the nerd culture zeitgeist with magic, so we're going to be dipping our toe in to Marvel at some point in our lives. We are men of a certain age and culture and interests that Marvel has crossed our paths once or twice.
For sure. I would say, for example, I'm more connected to Marvel than Spider-Man or probably Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Or it feels less jarring, I guess.
There's something about it that is giving me Final Fantasy vibes. And I can't tell if it's just the sort of rectangular icon. Like, I look at the Marvel icon of the card, like the logo on the card, and I'm like, is that Final Fantasy? Is that the Finn? Is that the little, you know, no, looks the same. But and also the power level, you know, we are in mid preview season. And so we should get to what we're doing here with these chronicles. But the power level of these cards is quite low so far. That's the scuttle. And it's going to be interesting to see what this limited format shakes out to be.
I saw that scuttle, and I don't know, maybe I'm terrible at card evaluation. I've liked a lot of the uncommons I've seen previewed so far.
I like them, but I don't, there's a lack of cards where I go, oh no, that's just an uncommon, you know? Like, everything seems like a, ooh, nice, great, good.
Yeah, until further notice, I trust Dave Humphries, and I'm assuming this set is going to be great.
Yeah. So what are we doing here, Ben? We're time traveling?
We're time traveling. We are recording episodes in the future, or we're in the past. You all listening are in the future. It's June 4th, 2026. Summer is fresh, and I am loving life. But we are recording these episodes as a backlog, or a forelog, a front log, to release when I am on my honeymoon and getting married at the end of June, June 27th. And Ethan, you're going to be on paternity leave.
Yeah, I will be about a week deep into my baby girl being born. So I'm sure I will be very sleepless and I don't know, hopefully
we'll
drafting a ton
of this format.
Hopefully we'll have drafted a lot of this format. That's the plan, at least. But we'll not be in a capacity to be, you know, coming to the podcast fresh every week. So we've got a really awesome, this is weird, I think especially weird, we've got a really awesome slate of episodes, I think, for folks for this month. And it's very strange. We've recorded these in the past, and we've also recorded them in like Christopher Nolan, M. Night Shyamalan reverse order. We recorded the four episodes. This one is the last of the Paternity Chronicles episodes we're recording, and it is the first one we're going to be releasing. And I'm really excited for the interview we have coming up for you all.
Absolutely. And we're recording the intro to this, having already recorded the interview. So we know, we can say with quite a good amount of confidence, this is a banger of an interview.
Yeah. I mean, the guest is a pro, and he's just, I feel like I could have talked to him for a few more hours. But as we find out, there's not enough time in the week for him. So we were happy to be able to spare at least one of his precious hours. So let's do a little housekeeping and we'll dive right in to what we've got going on for you today. Let's talk about the Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free. We have some great perks over at the Patreon if you do want to support the show in that way. We've got access to our Discord. The Discord I will be certainly tapped into in the coming, in this month gap. I'm going to need to get my magic conversations on and my magic scuttle on in some capacity, and the Discord will be my first stop for that. It's just a great community of like-minded limited individuals. And we've got some other perks. As you move up the reward tier rankings, you get access to this episode a day early ad-free, and also access to our bonus weekly episode via our podcast feed. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, please head on over to the Patreon page and support the show. And we just want to take the time to thank our past, present, and future patrons. We really appreciate your support.
Truly, we cannot say thank you enough. And speaking of that extra podcast, that's not going to be happening during the Paternity Chronicles. And as you're hearing this, we will have recorded our like early access experiences as well as our initial impressions episode. So you'll have gotten a couple weeks of Marvel content from us.
Yeah. So without further ado, let's get into the interview. Among his accolades, he has a fifth place finish at the 2022 World Championship and 40th in 2023. A slew of Twitch rivals' top finishes, including first place in the 2023 Arena Showdown. Three SCG Invitational top eights, including second at the Invitational in Indy in 2011. More than 20 SCG Open top eights. The king of 4-4 on day one and run it up to requalify on day two at the Pro Tour. Streamer, YouTuber, Bronze to Mythic speedrunner, tournament commentator, and in my opinion, the hardest working man in Magic the Gathering show business, Jim Davis. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. That was a nice little intro. That was fun. I was like, who's here? This is cool. Yeah, it's funny. I want to set my location at times to the second to last table on day two of the Pro Tour. It's like, I'm there. I'm in day two. But usually I'm floating around somewhere at table, you know, 79 or something like that. But that's cool.
I mean, you just had an incredible run there of like, just squeaking into day two and then like, oops, sorry, 10-5 again, like re-queued, like just an amazing, like don't count him out, always in it until the last second. Amazing.
Yeah, I did have one event where I started off 8-0 and then went 1-7 on day two to regress back to the mean, unfortunately. So
I'll take the intro again and I'll make sure that I include
yeah,
that.
Definitely. We'll insert that sure. One too. But yeah, it was a really cool run. My PT run for a few years, getting back on for the first PT. And then I was on a train for like 3 years, which is super cool. It's a thing I never really accomplished like back in the day when I was like playing like competitively as my focus, not doing content. It was really sweet. You know, now I've fallen off, which is cool. You know, I think it was a really, really awesome ride. And the best part was, of course, working with Team CFB and friends. Like, you know, my time in the Pro Tour 15, 20 years ago was just totally solo. And this time, like being able to work with freaking Seth and Reed and Gab and then Finkel and Kai on some of them was just like little gym, Pro Tour gym's dreams come true. So it was really, really cool.
I think everybody has maybe not fantasies, but certainly dreams. And maybe you think of like, what's it like in a testing house with a big team like that? And I'm curious what you see your role being on a big team or a big house like that. When you are in a room and the titans of the game are your peers, what do you bring to the table?
Imposter syndrome. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I mean, you mentioned it like that. It sounded like you're almost setting me up to pitch my Pro Tour house video, which we did with me and Reed. For Pro Tour Aether Drift, which was a huge project, almost an hour long. You watch it on YouTube. I'm sure we make a link to it or whatever. But yeah, I mean, imposter syndrome definitely to an extent, you know, where I was kind of like the grinder, if you will. Like, I'm just there. I'll be the bad guy. I'll play games. I'll do whatever you want. You know, I'm just like, I know I'm sixth guy on the bench. It's totally fine. I'm happy to be here and do whatever I can, you know, to get games in and support the team, you know. But it's interesting. It's a really interesting experience because you know, I'm there. I feel like I haven't earned it, but at the same time, it just like, that's Finkel, you know, and that's, you know, Gab and Seth, you know, and all these players who were just miles ahead of me, you know, cause the skill gap between, you know, the top 20 or 30 players to the next like pack of players is pretty high, even though that pack of players is still Pro Tour caliber, you know? So, definitely an interesting experience in the sense that, like, you know, kind of sometimes I'm like, why am I even here, man? How did I get into this mess? You know, but yeah, definitely really, really cool. You know, I always kind of looked at it as like, hey, I'm stoked to be here, be the best teammate that I can. I'm here for any game you want to play, any match you want to play. I was a bad guy a lot in testing where someone had a cool idea. I'm like, yep, I'm here. I'll play the bad guy. Mostly that.
Do you think your sort of content grind, which we will certainly talk about later on in the interview, sets you up for that you have just such a, like, not only am I experienced with the tier one decks in the meta, but I have done Freshly Brewed and I have worked around this weird card and I know about this interaction? Do you feel like that sets you up to play the villain, the bad guy, as you say?
Yeah, definitely useful. Like, you know, there'll be times where, like, it'd be kind of funny because I'd be in the Pro Tour Discord and someone would bring up, hey, this card works kind of well with this card. And I had like played that on 10 new brews already. And I was like, oh yeah, I tried this already. Here's, you know, some stuff. And like, it's funny. Gab had like a one-way channel for a bit where he would just kind of like spew ideas into the void. And then he didn't play in one of the recent PTs. And I kind of took that over and I was spewing ideas into the void. And it's funny because I made a Momo channel. So I really like Momo for Pro Tour Aether Drift where it wasn't really played. But I love the card Momo. I thought it was really, really good. And then they always copy the Discord for the next Pro Tour. And my Momo channel got tons of use for the next Pro Tour because Momo ended up being a really good deck, you know? So I was almost there. I was just a little early. But yeah, I think that, you know, I definitely have a good foundation of just like a bunch of the interactions that I'll see in, you know, kind of more content-y play. And then also just the endurance of like, you know, I can test literally all day. You know, it's funny, usually going into the testing house, you know, testing house, for those who don't know, is usually about a week before the event, you know, usually about, say, the Saturday before the Pro Tour. You know, we all can conglomerate somewhere, get an Airbnb, and then like that Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's just nonstop gamer hours, you know, where put everything down in life, go to the house for a week and test nonstop, whether you're drafting and doing constructed. And a lot of preparation is done before that as well, you know, online testing and the spreadsheets and stuff. And I don't get to do a lot of that because typically my time before a Pro Tour was banking up content for the 2 weeks I was going to be gone. So it was always a mad rush. It's a new set. I'm doing all this content. Then I finally get there on our spreadsheets. I'm one of the lowest games played. And then by the end of the house, I'm usually right near the top of games played. So I'm a grinder, you know, like I'm used to doing streams for 10 hours or 12 hours or whatever. So I can just game literally all day. So I'm bad guy. I'll just go from player to player. I'll just play all day. So I think that helps a lot. So you got to have some, you know, some grinders in your team to kind of fill out the hours played, if you will. And here I am.
Workhorse seems like an apt title for you on the team.
I'll take it.
Nice.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard. And BetterHelp's latest research confirms it. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. I've been seeing my therapist for over 2 years now, and I love talking about therapy. And I think that openness surprises a lot of people, but I also feel like it encourages people as well. I have a close friend who was on a real stop-and-go search for a therapist, and I was hanging out with him before his first session with someone he had found. About a week later, I texted him to ask how it went, and by his account, it was really positive. And even after all that, he was like, oh, I guess I need to schedule a follow-up. And I was like, yes, please do that. Even when everything goes well, we can still self-sabotage due to stigmas around therapy. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. They do the initial matching work for you, so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify needs and preferences, and if you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recs. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/lords. That's betterhelp.com/lords. And now back to the show.
Do you have a biggest contribution to an individual pro tour that you can recall, whether that's with a team or something that you feel like I did that all on my own when I was back doing it by myself?
It's funny, when I was playing on my own, I feel like I was always almost there. I very often had like close to the best deck, but I was like 4 to 8 cards off, you know? And like, so I just didn't get all of the way there, you know, like pro tour, like the Bloodbraid Elf block constructed pro tour, you know, where like the Esper Artifacts deck did well. And I like was close to it, but I was 8 cards off, you know, kind of stuff like that. So that's kind of my experience. And that's, you know, the product of not being on a team, where being on a team, especially with such good players, but being on a team in general just raises your floor so much, because there's just, you don't miss those little things, a lot of eyes, a lot of different things, you know? I don't know what my contribution is, honestly, to like the PTE teams. You know, I feel like I, you know, workhorse it. I never feel like there's been like a PTE where it's like, oh yeah, you know, that deck was my idea or whatever kind of thing.
Well, do you feel like, as a follow-up to that, I mean, we've been talking primarily about deck selection and constructed, but you're no slouch at limited either. Would you say you're just an all-around player? Would you say you contribute generally more in the limited portion? Because you've crushed some drafts at the
PTEs. I think probably more constructed. The thing is that, like, I'm okay with my limited game. My win rate for a limited in the PTE was, like, fine. I was, like, 55%, something like that, which is, like, not great for a PTE player. Like, I definitely had some crashed out drafts, you know, where a few, you know, like I'd have a bad 0-3, like in Worlds in 2024, I like 3 of the first draft, I like won a round or two and I was in pretty good shape. And then I just like 0-3 my draft on day 2 or whatever it was, you know, and just like, you know, so I feel like those crash outs hurt. But I don't know, you know, and again, it's the same thing where it's like we do a limited meeting and it's, you know, Luis or Sam running it and they're just like, top 10 limited player in the world. So like, I'll chime in when I can, you know, but for the most part, I'm like, you know, I'm just Jim. I'm here. I'm going to help out the best that I can, you know? I don't know, honestly, I would say I would think I'm more valuable for constructed, just like in kind of jamming games, format knowledge, you know, I'm always have a really good, you know, knowledge of the format from playing so much on stream and playing always different decks where I have a lot of ideas about cards and like, you know, how certain things can go where players might not have done certain things like that.
What's a limited format from the past, you know, X number of years, you pick, that you feel like really clicked with you from jump? And you're like, I got that from the start and I just crushed throughout.
For one of the PT formats or like before that?
Too? PT or just Bronze to Mythic, doesn't have to be a Pro Tour. Just anything that jumps out to you is like, I really got that. That clicked with me.
I really liked Kaldheim and Ikoria. Kaldheim especially. Like, I think those are two of my fastest runs on Bronze to Mythic. Those just like, I don't know, just clicked right into place. Ikoria was a really weird format, but I don't know, it just kind of jived. It's funny, I like Duskmourne a lot, and I felt pretty good in that format, but it was one of my longer Bronze Mythic runs where it was like almost one of the longest ones. I think that might have been me getting lost in the sauce a little bit, where there were so many fun things to try that I would just like, let's do this draft and see what happens, you know? But I like Duskmourne. Some of the recent sets didn't click great for me. Like I know Lord of the Rings was one where I just felt like, you know, I just couldn't, I black was so good. And that was such an obvious thing. Like one of the PT drafts where Sam Party was passing to me. And Sam is like the, you know, he'll draft anything, but he wants to be the best deck kind of drafter. And like, we discussed how black, you should be black. You know, you're black almost until you're not, basically. And he's passing to me and I'm like, all right, so I probably shouldn't be black. And then like, you know, he'd be this weird, you know, I get past the black card and what do I do? You know, but yeah, that one I recall like not clicking particularly well.
When I think about Bronze to Mythic and I think about your content in general, I think that content in the Magic space exists on probably the poles of one of two spectrums. Either it's you're hanging out, having a good time, and it's pure entertainment Magic content, or it's extreme spiky. Here's how to get better, maybe not a ton of production value. And I think very few people sit at the intersection of those things effectively as in terms of on one side and are also able to garner an audience interested in that. And I think you have successfully done that as a someone who just churns out content but has such, you know, clout, for lack of a better word, as a pro in the space. You've obviously put in your reps and your time. Was that a conscious decision for you? And do you ever feel a kind of pull to do one more than the other? You talking about doing wacky things in Duskmourne Draft makes me think for myself of times when I'm like, I want to do something fun and interesting to make it entertaining for the viewers, but I also want to win. And balancing that is often difficult. So I'm curious where you see landing on that spectrum and how you decide where you land.
Yeah, I think you just described my entire brand, you know, where that's kind of my goal, where, like you said, usually content creators are one or the other. You know, they're fun, they're entertaining, they really know how to handle the product, the content side of things, or they're just really freaking good and they put a camera on. And yeah, like, you're just here to watch excellence. I don't care what it looks like or sounds like, you know? So me, you know, trying, my goal is to live right in the middle of that spot, which very few people can do, because a lot of good Magic players don't care about content, and a lot of good content creators aren't very good at Magic. And both those things are totally fine. You know, like, remember back in the day with like the Star City team stuff, you know, my good friends, Dan Jessup and Andrew Jessup, I love them. They're good, both good friends of mine, phenomenal Magic players. And we were doing that Team MGG thing, you know, back in the SG tour. And it was very content focused, and trying to get them to stream or make content was like putting, you know, whatever, a square peg in a round hole, whatever it is, you know. It was just like, they just are not built for that. It's not what they're there to do, but they're great Magic players, you know? So it just, it's not easy for to find someone who's kind of capable of doing both. And it's funny where I sound so down, I'm honestly down on myself, but, you know, not confident about my Pro Tour, you know, prowess or whatever, when discussing myself amongst this team of unbelievable players, I am actually confident about my content side of things, you know, like, and I, you know, that's one thing I speak about very confidently, because I know I'm doing a good job. I work really, really hard at what I do. And I think that I've been doing it for 10 years, and I think I have a good bead on kind of what it takes to kind of hit that middle space. So that's the goal. That's always the goal. Yes, there's some conflicted times, to answer your question, where like, there's times where I'm drafting and I'll be like, all right, just hit diamond four. Now I can mess around a little bit, you know, or with the rank four right now, I can do a silly draft, you know, because I want to win, you know. And there's, I think that serious Pro Tour wants to win, Jim, is not very fun to watch, honestly, to where I've had the experience at times where I'll play in some open event, like a spotlight, you know, and it'll be in day two and I'll be X two or three or whatever. I'll play against someone and we'll like play the match, and whatever the result is at the match, they'll be like, are you all right? Like, you're like mean, you know? And just like, no, I'm just thinking, you know, I'm just like, I'm just not in content mode. I'm just like trying to win, you know? So me just sitting there and just super trying, trying to win wouldn't be very fun to watch. I would articulate what I was saying, but like, you know, I get locked in. You know, people say I have a mean face on when I'm playing because I'm just thinking, and I'm just dumb. It's so hard to think through things, you know? So like the brow is furrowed and the gears are turning, you know? So turning that off and being more fun takes down the win rate, but it's more fun too. So, you know, balancing that can be tough at times. There's sometimes where like, I'll be on draft 25 of a Bronze Mythic run. I'll do a silly deck. People are like, what are you doing? You know, we got to just, we're trying to win here or what, you know? So it's a little tough to balance at times, but I think the overall goal is good content.
Speaking of good content, I feel like you are one of the people who got onto the content train early, like at a very good time to get on the content train. How did you decide to make the, not transition necessarily, because like you said, you've done both pro and content creator. Curious to see, like, from your perspective, how you view yourself, like if you had to assign percentages, what percentage of you or your livelihood is content creator versus pro Magic player? And how did that shift through the years? Because if I were guessing right now, I would say you would say you're more content creator than pro Magic player, but at the intersection of both, like you said.
100% content. No, like even for the last 5 years, even when I was playing on the Pro Tour, I was doing the Pro Tour as a vacation, like a chance for me to kind of just play Magic for myself, you know, and just kind of, you know, to the point where I often wouldn't do really any content at all around the Pro Tour. I would do it after or before, but once I was there, I'm off the clock, you know. I'm just gonna play some Magic, have some fun, you know. I won the 2015 Players Championship at a point in my life where I was just about to get out of Magic. I was like, I've been playing the Star City Tour for, you know, a few years and really grinding every event and, queuing for their big, like, you know, 16 player end of the year super exclusive event. In 2014, I played in that, did really badly, wanted to come back, get another shot at it. And then going in 2015, I was like, all right, I'm almost a graduate from school here. I'm going to get my master's and be a teacher probably. Let's look into this. Let's look into some serious, you know, real life stuff. Then I won, and I won $20,000. And I had been dabbling a little bit in content. And I was like, all right, you know what? Now I have a little bit of bankroll behind me. You know, let's take a year. Let's take a year, hit it hard, and see what we can do. I'm going to give myself 1 year to see if I can, like, make this into a thing that can be sustainable, you know, and clearly it went pretty well. I'm talking to you guys here now, you know, but the first, you know, year or two, you know, Nicole was working full time and I was kind of like, you know, working on content stuff and helping out with Nicole and my stepson, John. But then, you know, things grew and grew and grew. But it's funny because early on in my Magic playing career, there was a kind of a negative perception around, I don't say content creators, more writers, because big back then writing was a big deal. And I was very apprehensive about writing articles for Star City for a while because it was sort of like, you know, the players who weren't good enough to do well at the PT were the writers, kind of. That was like the stigma, if you will, which was true and not true, but whatever. It was just kind of pre, like, Chapin and all, like, the really good pros writing for Star City and stuff. So I resisted it for a long time and then started writing articles in 2013. So I had the good fortune of, when I started doing content in 2015, I had 2 years of writing articles under my belt, as well as just playing on the tour for years and being a known player for feature matches. So when I started streaming, I had 100 viewers immediately, which is like a cheat code. Like, that's the, you know, most people start doing content with zero viewers, which is like impossible. I don't know how you even do it. I started with that leg up. I gave myself a year. And then I spent about 2 years trying to do sort of like pro Magic and content at the same time, where I was still playing the SG tour. I was still going to every event. I was streaming during the week. And I was kind of just like half-assing two things. And I realized about a year or two, and it was totally impossible and unsustainable. I was doing bad in all the events. My content was suffering. And I was like, all right, this is my job. My job is much more important. I'm going to stop going to events, leave my team that I was on or whatever at the time, and just focus on content. And if I play in events, it'll be kind of a fun thing to do on the side. That's kind of been my mentality ever since, even back to playing on the Pro Tour over the last few years.
Do you feel like you had any sort of insight at that time that it was going to be a better career decision or financial decision to do content? Like, how confident were you that it was going to work out? Because I feel like you were ahead of the game in a lot of ways. Did you know that content was going to explode the way that it has? And that Magic would ultimately, I think, lend itself more towards content than pro play, obviously, at the end of the MPL and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I was on the content over pro play thing pretty early. Like, I think that one thing I'm proud of in my career, I've done a pretty good job of, like, figuring out when to get off a sinking ship, you know, when it comes to, like, some of my teams that I've been on, sponsorships I've been with, you know, and, you know, trying to, like, I played a lot of traveling and pro Magic and, you know, you win $1,000 here, $1,000 there. Cool. That's nice, you know, but there's a point where you're going to need to be an adult to make a little more money than that, you know? And, and then content was a viable avenue to do that, which is really, really cool, you know? And then I sort of quickly realized trying to do both how foolish that was, where I was just, you know, spewing money, going to these events and not being prepared either. You know, the Magic competitively isn't really financially viable for basically anyone in the world unless you are Seth Manfield or, like, you know, one of, like, the top 50 players in the world, you know? And even then, they're subsidizing with content also. You know, Luis and Reed are doing articles for, you know, Channel Fireball, whatever they're called now, you know, and so on and so forth. And for a long time on Star City, which is now kind of a shell of what it was as far as content wise, but, you know, Brad Nelson, Patrick Chapin, the lineup they had writing articles for them, that was a big part of their monetary take in, you know? And, like, once the whole MPL thing happened, that was obviously very ugly. And that was an attempt to try and fix that in a way that caused 10,000 more problems, you know? But yeah, you know, I kind of figured out early on that, like, hey, like, content's the way to go, you know? It's stings a little bit to be not being at events that love competing, you know, but I recognize where the bills got to get paid and stuff. And it's also, I really enjoy it. It's a new challenge for me, you know, where I, you know, I'm always taking content as a challenge, trying to do the next thing and the next big thing, kind of grow from that. You know, I think it's an area I've done reasonably well in, where, like, trying to keep expanding and new platforms, new ideas, you know, new ways to find sponsors, new ways to this and that. It's like a game of, it's a different game now, where that's the game I'm really good at now, you know, like, I'm good at Magic too, I guess, but, like, you know, I'm better at this content game than I am at Magic in that sense, you know, which is why I say when I go to the PT house, you know, I'm there. I'm going to try my best, and I'm obviously there for a reason, but these guys are better than me. But Gab asked me about a thing on stream. I'll talk about that for an hour, cause I know damn well what I'm talking about, you know? So yeah, I, you know, pretty early on, I kind of decided that, and you know, thankfully it's worked out well for me, and it's all going really good. So
how do you keep things fresh in terms of, I feel like not only have you found things that are mainstays, I think of Mog Mondays, I think of Jim D Throwback Thursdays, I think of obviously Bronze to Mythic as a staple.
Can't leave out Karn of the Week.
Karn of the Week, 10 new brews, freshly brewed, Hand of the Week. Yes, like you have so many staples, so many things, plates that you keep spinning, but you also didn't come up with those from jump. You weren't doing those in 2015. So are you a solo venture in this? Do you have people you collaborate with? I know you work with an editor. I know you have people in the space. Are you just coming up with these ideas? Where do new ideas come from? And I'll ask a second question, which is, how do you decide what stays and what's important to the brand of Jim Davis?
So yeah, team-wise, Nicole has worked for me now since COVID, where Nicole was bartending full-time, COVID hit. COVID was very good for me as a content creator because everyone's just home watching YouTube. So, you know, however rough that year was for most folks, it was pretty good for us in the content space. And then we hit the point where once everything reopened again, she just stayed to work with me. So she runs all the YouTube, she runs all the backend stuff, posts all the videos, makes up the thumbnails, you know, she does all the backend stuff, which is great. And I'm constantly bouncing ideas off of her. She's a really good mind for stuff like that. You know, she's just very smart in general. And then I've had an assistant for, God, like 3 or 4 years now, where was part-time. I'm on my third assistant now. My first two were great. Connor now works for TCC. He kind of poached him from me. It's like a funny story. Like I like told him about it. I'm told him not to poach him, and he did, but in a very nice way. Prof is like the best. Prof like just bought me Rangers tickets randomly. It was like, hey, Jim, sorry. And I'm like, for what? And then the next day, Connor's like, we got to talk, you know, but Connor's great. And he works full-time. He like lived in Portland, like 2 miles from Prof's like studio or whatever. It was like made perfect sense. So then I had Cassidy, who was phenomenal. He was younger, and he was a really talented kid, but he just didn't love being on the computer side of things. He's like, he's just out. I see his Instagram. He's like, oh, I'm climbing a mountain today in some range. I'll be home in 2 weeks. See you later. So he's great. He's the one who worked on the PT video, both PT videos, the world's one and then the behind the scenes one, did a phenomenal job on it. And now I have Ryan, who's working with me full-time now. And Ryan is just unbelievable. Ryan is like the Bronze with the bingo thing, entirely him. Like we kind of had an idea to do it. He programmed the entire thing, made all the graphics. Like I couldn't do all the things he's doing. It's unbelievable. And it's funny because now he's working on my Riftbound channel also. So he's double dipping. He's working on the Riftbound channel, MMA Magic content. Actually, I had two of them because we're like running out of hours in the week kind of thing. But he's phenomenal. And all three people that I've worked with, you know, when you hire someone to work with you, it's daunting because you're paying someone money to kind of come into your space and whatever. And all I ever want someone I hire is to kind of like, be like, oh, that's cool. I didn't think of that. Or I couldn't do that. Or I asked for this, you gave me this. That's so much better, you know? And it's been an awesome experience working with all three of them. And Ryan's really great. So it's definitely takes a team, you know? So I have Nicole working for me. I got Ryan working for me. And yeah, it's, you know, it's all collaborative. It's cool. And then to answer your question about like, you know, kind of shows and branding and stuff, it's just a spaghetti method. You just chuck shit at the wall and some things stick and some things don't, you know. Eventually you hit a point of saturation where like after 4 years of Mog Monday, I just didn't have anything to say anymore. Like I just played every possible Goblin deck. Goblins wasn't really good in any particular format. So I kind of like retired as a weekly show. And now it's just kind of like a, you know, whatever I feel like a thing, you know, but 10 new brews, set review, you know, kind of get into a groove, you know, where I just, every new set, I do a set review, I do 10 new brews, we do the new Bronze Mythic run. It's kind of cyclical. There are so many sets these days, it happens really often, you know, but, you know, you try new things and you kind of think some things work and some things don't. It sucks because there are definitely feelings at times of just like not enough hours in the week where me and Nicole discussed doing a standard podcast because I have long complained for a long time that the state of limited podcasts and Magic is fantastic. Most thanks to you guys, honestly. You guys did an awesome show. You guys are one of the few pieces of Magic content I consume. You guys are great. But whenever I want to listen to a standard or constructed podcast, I just can't find one. That's at the level of what you guys are doing for limited, you know? So me and Nicole discussed doing a standard podcast. We made a logo for it. And then I started doing the Riftbound stuff. And now I just don't have time to do anything. So not enough hours in the week, a lot of the time. But, you know, with help, we're getting through and doing a lot of cool stuff. And hopefully we'll do more cool stuff.
I was hoping to put you on blast because I forget when, maybe it was now a year ago or so that we had a chat about podcasting. And I was very excited because I, too, love consuming. I consume content across all disciplines, just as long as it's good. And I, too, am yearning for some strong, constructed podcasts. And I wanted to say, what gives, man? But I get it. You are, I mean, I forgot entirely just because I am so focused on Magic, forgot entirely about the whole Riftbound thing, which is just another massive undertaking for you. So when I hear that you have two people that you're working with full time and that you don't have enough hours in the week, maybe my request for a Jim Davis constructed podcast can wait.
It's funny because like, A, I want to do it, but B, I mostly want to do it with Nicole because Nicole, you know, she's always behind the scenes and Nicole is just like a goddamn saint. She's just always holding down the fort. You know, I leave for 2 weeks for a PT. She's home with two kids, you know, managing the house and keeping everything in order, you know, and stuff. And I really want to get her involved more. And she was super involved with the VML, the Venus and Mercury League, which was around for a long time. She was part of their, you know, internal, like helping to run things. She used to do commentary for them, which is great. It was like her way to have her own kind of like thing to do in the Magic space that, you know, didn't have to do with me. She could just do her thing and she would play in the VML. She would commentate the VML, which is awesome. I mean, that fell by the wayside, unfortunately. She kind of hasn't had like a Magic outlet. You know, she plays Arena on her phone and stuff, but like she can't really go to events too often. I've been trying to get her to go to some RCQs so she can queue for an RC and then come with me when I commentate. And now it's like, hey, Grandma, Grandpa, Dad, I got to go to work and Nicole's qualified. So you take Cassian for a couple of days and we're going to go, you know? So, but it's hard to find time for her to play and be involved, whatever. So a lot of the allure of doing that podcast with her was that to kind of like have an avenue to kind of keep her involved in Magic. So it makes me sad we haven't done that yet. It's the thing I think I would like to do at some point. But again, just not enough. We need to get an extra day or something like that. Or for them to not release a set every 6 weeks. That'd be cool too.
So can you walk us through a typical work week for you?
Sure. I mean, it depends on if I'm traveling or not. You know, typically I try and stream like 2 or 3 days a week. When I'm streaming, I'm often recording for YouTube. You know, I have that kind of down to a science where I think that content creators often realize that like just a straight VOD doesn't work on YouTube. You can't just like dump your VOD and hope that people watch it, you know? So I have a pretty good system where I kind of record a video live, but it's, you know, with clever use of the pause button on OBS, you know, I kind of sell it live, edited it, whatever. So usually when I'm live, I'm recording videos, you know, now with the Riftbound channel, that's also kind of a big undertaking where we're trying to do 2-ish, 3-ish videos a week. And that channel is very different from my Magic content in that my Magic content's kind of live and free flowing, you know, and it has production value to make it feel like a YouTube video, but it's not like, you know, heavily, heavily edited. Where the Riftbound channel, Arcane Academy, is I'm trying to be like the Tolarian Community College of Riftbound, you know, where it's really edited, some, you know, often scripted, you know, kind of more work goes into it in that respect. So that's been a lot of work too, which is kind of cutting my time a lot as far as Magic content goes. Like I'm feeling it a bit on like the shorts end. I used to like set like 4 shorts a week on Magic. Now I do like one. So usually it's just bouncing around between projects. You know, it's sort of set my stream schedule and then I'm figuring out, okay, well, what's the Riftbound content going to be? What's the next step for whatever the next new Magic set's going to be? Trying to do new things is always the hardest thing where you get into a routine and it's just like, okay, it's a new set. We're going to do a set interview. We're going to 10 new brews, yada, yada, yada. But like the bingo thing we recently did for Bronze Mythic, you know, where that's a new thing that had to be thought of, storyboarded, kind of talked out, you know, worked on. And it's kind of hard to find time to do things like that sometimes, which makes me a little sad because like there's things I want to do that are exciting new stuff that I haven't really gotten to. But yeah, it's mostly it, you know. And then if I'm traveling, it's always a little more hectic where kind of cram things in. Thursday, I get in a plane, I go to fly to Cincinnati or Atlanta, whatever the event is, you know, I'm there, do commentary for the weekend. Then I come home, catch back up. You know, definitely a lot of catch-up cycles for sure when I'm traveling. You know, the commentary thing's pretty new in the last like year or two. Super cool, super fun, but time-consuming. It's weird because like it's a lot, but it just what I do. So I don't think about it that much from like a regimented standpoint. That makes sense.
Do you draw lines for yourself of like, it's 8 p.m., I'm turning off notifications on my phone, I'm doing this? Like, I feel like there's a... you could always do more as a content creator. You're your own boss. You could always post another video if you wanted. You could always do another stream if you wanted. How do you decide where the balance, to how to draw the lines and have balance between work life and your personal life?
It's very challenging. I think in the last, you know, year or a few years, I've been more stringent with it, where back in the day, like when I was streaming, you know, early on 2016, 2017, Nicole was still working full time. It was literally 9 a.m. to midnight every day. I just like, you know, or, you know, John got the bus. I would hang out with him. You know, he was like 6 or 7 at the time. You know, I'd make dinner, yada, yada, yada. And then until Nicole got home, I was back on the computer. And, you know, I was making thumbnails and posting videos. So when I was doing everything, I was just streaming, doing the videos, doing the YouTube, doing the thumbnails, posting everything, you know. And, you know, that got to be a bit much, you know. So once Nicole took over the YouTube, that helped a lot, because now I'd finished streaming at 5, 6 o'clock and I could be kind of done for the day, you know. So I've made a conscious effort where I need to think of myself first, you know, where you're about to get off, you've been live for 9 hours and you get a big raid, you know, and it's like, okay, what do you do? You know? And it's like back in the day, I'd be, all right, I guess it's just a 12-hour stream now, I guess. Let's go. You know, whereas now I'm like, okay, listen, I can't control that. I'll put on a good show for a half an hour, like I was going to. I'm going to get off like I was supposed to, you know, like kind of turn that voice in your head off a little bit. That's like, what are you doing? You've got all these viewers, keep going, you know? And I think it's also like, you hit a point where early on in your content career, you're ascending. You're trying to hustle, you know, grow, build. You hit a point where I don't say you're content, but like you're good. The sales are on. If you were to disappear for a week or two, which I did last year, you know, things would still be okay. You know, whereas early on, that kind of comfort is not there, and it is a stressful business to be in. Because I remember Saffron Olive saying this once, and being like, "What if today is the day where everyone just stops watching? Could happen. Who knows? You know, like that's a scary thought." So, you know, I think that, you know, now I'm at a point where, like, you know, like happened last year, I had a medical problem. I didn't post content for a month. And I had wonderful folks like you and other folks who were able to step in and kind of help out. And we did some fun stuff with it, but, you know, I was just gone for a month, but it was okay. You know, so I've been in the game for 10 years now. So it's long enough where if I have a hiccup or I'm not there for a little bit, I'm not worried that much about the dip, you know? So as far as mental health goes, I try and turn off at a certain point, you know, like 6, 7 PM, I'm done. If I have to do a night stream, I'll do it. If I have to do a video, I'll do it. But I try and cut some limits, which is very, very hard to do.
You just saying, when you were like, if I get a big raid, I can't control that, whatever. I was like, that's some therapy speak right there. That's a man who's working on himself too, as well as his content.
Yeah. It's tough, you know? And like, it's just, again, I think it's the luxury of having done it for so long. And, you know, I think doing a good job kind of establishing like a community of folks who watch me and enjoy my content, which is awesome. And I'm like super thankful for it. People want to watch me make an ass of myself on the internet, you know? And they're just, that's the community. They're going to be there tomorrow and a week from now, you know? And even if I were to, you know, do something different or stop playing Goblins every Monday or stop playing Modern, whatever it might be, they'll still be there for the next step, which is really, really cool. So it's a luxury of having done it for so long, I think, but it is definitely a challenge.
Can we talk about Bronze to Mythic?
No.
Okay, next question. I feel like you perhaps have the most experience doing a monthly Bronze to Mythic run of the different stages of the ladder. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to your impressions of the Bronze to Mythic players? Like, what do you make any adjustments? Do you find that you can coast up until blank and then I really have to put on my tryhard hat? Like, what are your thoughts about the different rankings on the ladder?
It's interesting. It's changed a lot in the last year. I think the Universes Beyond sets are staggering a lot of the audience, where typically the first few days on a ladder in bronze are like, you know, it's just shooting chickens in a barrel. What's the saying? I don't know, you know, but, you know, very easy. You know, you get to gold or platinum like pretty quickly. The last few sets, notably the Magic IP sets after the Universes Beyond sets, it's been rough out there in like bronze and silver. I think on day one and day two, there are a lot of very good players who didn't play the Spider-Man set or the Turtle set or whatever Universes Beyond set that they just, you know, don't like for whatever reasons, you know, but they're coming back. And so they're in bronze. They've decayed far enough. And like, I found in my the most recent set in Strixhaven, I was in silver for like six drafts. It was insane. Like, so what is happening? Like, you know, like this is kind of wild. So I think that the universe is beyond schedule. There's a bit of that going on. I feel like you don't feel that much of a difference from Platinum to Mythic. To an extent, there's a bit of flow and churn. One thing I've tried to do over the last year or so is that originally I would try and do the entire run in one season, where I would try and do it in like 2 weeks. I would kind of just get the whole thing in, get it done with. But the problem was that those episodes are spread out over a month or two on YouTube. So,
and the format shifted. Yeah.
Right. So episode 19 is going out a month and a half into the format, but it was recorded on day 6 of the format. And folks are like, why the hell is that in the pack still? Or why is this person trying to draft Witherbloom when it's clearly unplayable? You know, like, and it was also me. I'm there drafting Witherbloom because I'm just trying out stuff or whatever, and it's not a possible thing or whatever. So now I split it up, which is more less taxing on me because I'm trying to do it in a longer time frame, which is cool. So I've been trying to kind of to ride the wave of the whole format through the whole season. One trick of the trade I found is that things are always easier on weekends. Like Saturday, Sunday, Bronze Mythic is a lot easier than weekday, you know, during work hours, Bronze Mythic. It's like a poker effect too. It's like, you know, you play in a poker room in Vegas at, you know, whatever, 3 o'clock on a Monday, you're probably playing against the Reds, you know, like you're not playing against, you know, the fish you want to play against kind of thing. So there's been times where I'll be like, man, I'm struggling this set. Let's schedule that Sunday stream and let's get some wins, you know? But yeah, it's interesting. I feel like it's always just a wild ride where you never know what to expect. I'll play against players in bronze who seem really, really good. Play against a player in diamond who's just like got 45 cards in their deck, kind of what the hell's happening, you know? It's a ride. How do you guys feel? Do you guys feel that too? Do you guys feel a certain like flow to the Bronze Mythic run? Do you feel like there's certain times in the format where things are easier or harder?
Well, I mean, I'll speak for myself, which is that I don't usually, you know, because I'm usually Mythic, it resets to plat. So I'm not
sure.
Unless it's like I didn't really like the set and I started playing cube best of three instead. Oops, now I'm in silver. Like,
right.
It's rare that I run the whole gamut
sure.
of it. And I do feel a similar thing to you of like, once you're in like, I don't know, plat two, plat one, it's kind of all the same. Like,
right.
It's not a marked difference. Sometimes you get stuck in diamond three. Sometimes you get stuck in diamond one, whatever. But it feels like a similar-ish. We're talking about like gradations. I don't know. Ben, what do you think?
I slum it in silver sometimes. So if I get in a busy season of band, I will say one thing that I try to do, like, and that frequently happens when a new format is out because I've not played because of the end of the format and I got busy at school and I know I understand the limited format well enough to speak to it on the podcast. And then the new format comes out and I do try pretty hard to get to like plat or diamond quickly because I want to be playing against people and seeing what good decks they're drafting in those ranks. Like I do feel like there's that sort of benefit early in the format of, while everyone's trying to figure it out, if you're playing against better competition, you can see, oh, they smashed me with blue black, and then start to think about blue black as an archetype and what that offers and like start to draw conclusions from there.
Yeah, that's totally reasonable, I think.
Do you find any big shifts you have to make from I'm doing bronze to mythic, I'm playing best of one on the ladder, to I'm prepping for in pod play for the pro tour? Like, yeah, is there a learn that so we here at Lords of Limited know that those are big differences, but I'm not sure that like folks out there truly understand like how they're almost different games.
Yeah. It's night and day, like to the point where we've had meetings on the pro tour team of like, hey, you're playing best of one, like
stop, please stop,
possibly just screwing up. Yeah. You know, just like, it's especially with how sets are designed these days and like the play booster era where we have some drafts on Bronze Mythic where I'm like, man, these packs stink and I'm going to get obliterated because I'm going to play against, you know, I'm in a bottom 10% pod of power level going around and I'm going to play against players who are not in a bottom 10% pod and they're going to destroy me. And that's often what happens, you know? And also, especially Strixhaven. Strixhaven is a really swingy format. Like the games themselves, like the cards are really powerful. The things that happen in the game are very powerful. You know, and this is some crazy games in best of one where you just lose some crazy math magics, you know, whatever, two creature all removal spell deck that's, you know, lines up well against your your creature deck, whatever you're doing, you know. And in best of three, you could like board in some negates or whatever, you know. That isn't there. I feel like Strixhaven probably would be a really good best of three format. I've played a best of three really, because of like the polarization of archetypes being so stark, you know, like a two creature Prismari deck is very different than a, you know, super low curve Silver Quill deck, which is very different than a full on soup, but creature and whatever kind of deck. And your cards that are good against one are not good against the other and vice versa. You know, like the format of Thoughtseize or like a cancel or a negated variant would be good against one, not the other and so on. So I don't play a ton of best of three when I'm not prepping for the Pro Tour. And I miss it a little bit. You know, there's definitely times where I was like, man, I just lost this deck. And like, we just play best of three, I would definitely win the next two games, you know? But definitely very, very different. Definitely agree with your sentiment that it's like a pretty different game overall. Not to say it's a bad game or like a worse game, but it is definitely a little more volatile. I need to be kind of aware of the swings at times, which happen.
I think that point about the power level of pods was the biggest thing that I feel like in my one Pro Tour stint and Arena Championship stint that I was like, this is a real conscious shift to make where your assumption of the power level of a deck for the format changes, where you assume that like I need to be at this threshold to compete. And if I am below that, I will get my butt kicked. Where it's like, if my deck is poor, the seven other people at my table are seeing the same packs and their decks are subsequently going to be poor. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to get stomped here. It just has to do with the relative power level of the packs at the table.
It's a very different experience drafting with seven other excellent drafters,
right,
than a random arena pod, where some folks who don't know, when you're drafting an arena, your pod is a random selection of seven players who hit the button at the same time you did. So even if you're in Mythic, you might have a bronze player to your left, a silver player to your right. It's just a random assortment. So when you have a pod like that, say you have three bronze players who are just in their first draft, or it's just whatever reason they're not taking the right cards or they're missing things, you know, so players actually really juiced up. That doesn't happen in a high quality Pro Tour caliber pod, where you're not going to get that fourth pick stock up or whatever, you know, like, or you're not going to, you know, you're going to slide to an archetype, you're going to cooperate with your, you know, whatever it is, you know. So the decks will be a little scrappier in Pro Tour drafts, where you're, you know, trying to find that 23rd card that really fits your deck properly. A lot of the limited meetings about that, kind of like, okay, what cards are not necessarily the best overall, but can be used in profitable ways. So when the draft does get scrappy, I can have the right tools to win anyway, is a big part of limited discussion for Pro Tours. That's not really a factor in like arena drafts.
Speaking of some of that limited testing stuff, I have a couple questions for you. I'm going to shoot the first one at you right now, which is, I feel like we do the PT draft reviews as a staple of the show. And obviously we have, it's a very small peek into the pro drafting mentality, but I feel like I've come away from doing that now over several years with the thought that pros are reluctant to pivot like 4 to 6 picks into a draft. Like, is there any talk about that in limited testing meetings of like, once you hit this threshold of power level, you should probably stay on track and just, you know, see what comes, because the packs dry up so much faster because there's 8 competent drafters at the table. Can you speak to the benefits or dangers of pivoting like in pack one?
Yeah, I think that like general consensus on our team is that like, in this play booster era where the packs are just so good and the cards are so powerful, that staying open is super fine. You know, for a lot of guys on the team, we drafted 20 years ago. You go draft Odyssey and it's hard to get 23 playables. You know, like there are just some truly rancid cards in the pack. You know, like Odyssey has like 4 Stone Rain variants of common or something like that, you know, or just like Earth Rift and Demolish and whatever, you know. So back then, people would lock in a little sooner because you just couldn't risk not having playables. These days, every card's playable, you know, to the point where like, you know, that card is mediocre. It'd be a disaster to play it, even though it is a 3/3 flyer for 4 or whatever, you know? So I think that because of that, you can be so much more flexible in your drafts. You can just like, I'll say it up front, just take the best card for the first 5 picks. Just blinders on, take the best card. Don't think about it. And then pick 6, look at what you have and kind of go from there, you know, to not get locked in.
And is that what you do at the PT also? Like, do you take that same mentality to the PT drafts?
Not as extreme, and it's definitely format dependent as well, but to an extent, yes. You know, like I think in Lorwyn, like Lorwyn was a block where you just had to get in the right deck. You know, you really want to make sure you're in the right deck because there's so many cards that were so good that no one can use but you if you're in the right deck. So pivoting pick 8 of pack 1 was like okay if you were pretty sure you're going to get into it, you know? So it is pretty format dependent, I think. Lore being a good example of one where you can pivot late, but that flexibility is discussed. Sort of like what can you do in this format? When can you get out? When can you abort mission? And then also viewing picks from the lens of how flexible can I be and how much equity does that get me? So for example, in Strixhaven, I kind of hate starting Silvercore Lorehold because once you're in, you're in. Those decks are what they are. They're on rails. They don't splash very well. They're kind of hard to get out of because their cards are so linearly doing what they're doing. Whereas if you start one of the green decks or like, you know, Prismari Quandrix sort of multicolor soupy, whatever stuff, you kind of have a lot of avenues where you can kind of branch off with a land or two and now you're in a different color with a splash, whatever else it might be. So that's kind of discussed too, where it's like, okay, it's not only about the general feeling of like, how much can I pivot in this set? It's what are the pivot points and what are the decks that can do that and not do that? Is there an avenue you'd rather lean because it's more flexible? When do you bite the bullet and say, all right, I'm goblins now, you know, like I'll be the goblin drafter. It'll be me, you know, I'll do it, you know, in Lorwyn. So yeah.
A follow-up specifically about Lorwyn as a substitute for sets that have a clear best deck, like in Elves, when you're going to the PT, like, are you psyched to start Elves or are you worried you're going to get pushed off it? Do you ever try to zig when everybody else is zagging? Like how do you approach that format to format? If there's a clear tier one deck that is better than everything else.
It's funny, personally or team wise, like Lord of the Rings is a good example where black was like, you know, you're black until you're not, kind of that mentality. I hated that. You know, like I like being like green in Lord of the Rings. You know, I didn't like being black. I hated fighting over it. I hated feeling contested, you know? And then Lord was similar with like elves. Is a typical manager at the Pro Tour was, how'd your draft go? 1-2-1, lost to a good elf deck. That was like the most common thing you would hear in the hall of, you know, how everyone's records do, you know, that was my record in both drafts, you know, like, or whatever. I think personally, I just naturally am kind of contrarian in Magic, perhaps to my detriment at times, where I just want to like find the other lane and find the edge, you know, kind of thing. But I think that the team wise, there's a lot of players who are just very happy. Like Sam Party's a good example. Sam just wants to be the best deck. He'll do other things, but he's the best deck until he's not, kind of thing. So I think it just varies from player to player. I think personally, I try and find a deck that I like or I'm comfortable with, and I'm more comfortable kind of doing that than just to be trying to be elves or whatever. But there's a real danger in like trying to force a deck when it's just not there, and just having a mediocre elf deck fighting with four other players is a pretty easy way to 1-2 a draft.
And follow up to that, as we've ended up into the data era here with 17 lands and all that, and you know, talking about best of one being a different ball game than best of three, does your protesting team incorporate data? If so, how? And how do you navigate it being data from everyone playing Arena who signed up for the program in best of one and apply that to competitive pods in best of three at the Pro Tour?
17 lands is a very funny point of contention from the pro team. There are some folks who literally just live and die by it. Like Gab is just like, during limited meeting, has 17 lands up, he just 54.2%, you know, like, and there are some players who are just like adamantly against it. Finkel went on a tirade for Aether Drift, just a tirade about how the data, and he was correct in like the sense that he was trying to talk about like how the data is skewed in certain ways and like all the days data can be misleading and so on. And he was right to an extent, but like, you know, read as the usual read take of just being balanced of like, data is good, use it properly. It's not gospel. Kind of, you know, whatever. But yeah, it's funny the different approaches, you know. And then when you have a team like the team that I'm on, Seth is just good at Magic. He just is going to do well no matter what, period. And like the players can really just kind of lean on that a lot, you know, or Seth can go in, do 5 drafts and go to the PT and just go 5-1 his drafts, you know, like, cause he's just that naturally good, you know? And it's hard to fight against that sometimes where it's like, well, hey, how, what can you give, you know, give me from that, you know, can I have a little bit of that, you know? So trying to, you know, to get past players' general, like not even preferences, just general comfort where it's just like, hey, I'm good. I'm going to 5-1 anyway, you know, like, okay, well doing what do you think about this kind of thing? You know? So it's definitely a fun mix of personalities. And what everyone wants to do is definitely not always the same. But it's kind of fun to, you know, you try and find what you're comfortable with and glean what you can from everyone else.
And where are you at on the data spectrum?
I'm mostly with Reed. Yeah. You know, just sort of like, I think the data is definitely useful, but easy to misalign. I think, and having a keen eye for like, well, why is this card rated so highly? For example, I did my Draftsman Takes the Wheel episode of Bronson Mythic a day or two ago. And Nightmare first pick, Together as One, ranked a 46 on Draftsmith. And what's the name of the Silver Cold 2 drop, Repartee, Modular Counters guy?
Scolding Administrator.
Yeah, that was a 51. Uh-oh. So I was like, Administrator over Together as One. And I died inside. Objectively, whether it's power level or not, that's a real spot where it's very, very easy to say, why is this happening? I'll explain it to you why. Because people who draft the Silver Cold card and then actually play it have a good Silver Cold deck. It is what it is. It does what it does. People put Together as One in decks they shouldn't put it in. They put it in decks that they've train wrecked. They put it in every deck, you know? So the win rate naturally would just be lower because of that. So even if a data speaks to that being a lesser win rate card, it's a very easy spot to see that, like, well, okay, we extrapolate a little bit. We can think about this. Why is this card rated lower? There's a lot of reasons why. So being able to do that and look at the ratings and say, you know, okay, this is an easy spot for the data to be wrong and be right and so on and so forth is important. And then also just like, I think it's just useful to have a, you know, hey, that card's rated pretty high. I wonder why. Let's talk about that. That's a very common thing to happen in limited meetings where this card's rated high. I don't think it's that good. What's everyone's experiences? And can everyone kind of talk about it? And it can kind of put eyes on a card you didn't have eyes on before. So data is helpful, but you definitely need to be able to kind of push through the noise and also the noise of best of one and just arena, kind of how arena plays in general.
It's interesting. I feel like I would imagine the introduction of 17 lands for limited testing meetings has added, you know, effectively another person to the room because there's the data piping up saying this card has this win rate, but you can't, you can't argue with the data. Like you can't be like, shut up numbers, be quiet. Like they're right there. And it's just about like, now I have to contend. I not only do I have to contend with my own and Reed's and Jim's experience with the card, but I also have to contend with the masses experience.
Yeah, I think it's just helpful to have as like a baseline barometer where there's times where we'll all the common and, you know, is it the third or fourth best common? Is it the third or fifth best common? We're kind of like trying to rate it. What's 70 lands say? You know, go over, look at it. Oh, it's actually a pretty high win rate. It's actually a higher win rate than this card. And there's times where like, you know, the green 3/1 that surveils on ETB and death has a higher win rate than like the best green removal spell. And like, it's clearly not better than the best removal spell, but it goes to show, hey, this card's undervalued. And like, because it's being taken much later, it has a higher win rate because of that. It's in decks that have a higher quantity of better cards and yada, yada, yada. So you kind of look at it and go, well, that's definitely not right, but we can glean information from that.
That's such a healthy approach. I love it.
Do you think you could incorporate that kind of a healthy approach, Ben?
No chance.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
That's the thing. It's like, there's like Gab is just, what's the data say? It's higher. That's better. That's my top common, period. That's it. End of story. You know, like it's different players in the team have different, you know, methodologies for it. And I don't think that that's necessarily like completely wrong or right. I think it's funny to look at data as an art, not a science, but it is an art, not a science.
Well, that's my whole pitch about draft, like basically from the introduction of the data era, is to be like, Magic attracts a kind of person that wants a right answer and a wrong answer, that wants a clear line in the sand of I did the right thing, I did the wrong thing. And unfortunately, this game does not give you that. And I think draft is such a beautiful example of like, you can give maybe not a pack one pick one, but maybe a pack one pick four to 12 different people and get four different answers. And you want to look at that and go, but who's right? And unfortunately for people who want the who's right, it's not always the case. There's not always a who's right, but it's about what the why behind what you're doing.
And yeah, it's funny. Going back to my contributions to the team, one thing I like doing the most in limited meeting is when there's an argument about a card or a pick, usually we try and set like a baseline of like, you know, what's the best common of a set? It's this common. That's the barometer for commons, uncommons, rares, yada, yada, yada. So we'll look at some rare, but it's like, oh, fine. Is it better or worse than the best common of a set? And the people will be arguing. I'll be like, everyone stop. Who's taking the common? Everyone raise their hand. Who's taking the rare? Raise your hand. And we'll often have a, you know, a 7-5 vote. And like, it's a kind of way to just like, what are you taking? And then people in the moment are like, I do want the common, you know, kind of thing. That's a way to kind of just pull it out of people. And very often you've got these, you know, 14 players who are all insane. It's a 6-6 vote or a 7-7 vote or whatever on a non-clear consensus. So there definitely isn't a clear right answer a lot of the time. There's often a right answer for you as a player. You know, if I'm really comfortable drafting the green decks, I should take the green mana fixture common over the weird black rare or whatever it might be.
I would imagine that like that is a much more, fruitful outcome to a limited testing meeting of not making sure that everybody is coming to a consensus, but that everybody has as much information as possible to come to a consensus for themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. If the goal is to come to a consensus, limiting would take 4 days, not 6 hours, you know, like, and probably would never resolve.
Right. Okay. So by the time this episode airs, Ben will have gotten married and I will have had my second kid.
Holy crap. Congrats to both of you.
Thank you. And hopefully we're both just thriving in the future. As someone with experience in both departments, what advice do you have for us?
That's not a question I was prepared to answer for this interview. I think marriage-wise, communication is like the most important thing, which is like super stereotypical to say. But through being with someone for a very, very long time, you can definitely forget that at times. So there's a time where you can kind of stop and be like, hey, we're on the same team. We need to like, where are we at right now? You know, we gotta come together and figure out what we can do to be on the same page with this or whatever it might be, you know, which can be challenging because it, when things will, you get into the sort of daily doldrums of work and routine and making dinner and cleaning the house, and making sure the bills are paid and making sure the kids are this and that, you know, you can kind of forget that, I think, at times, and kind of get, you know, I don't say like resentful, but like, you know, you kind of just like get off and you're, ugh, you know, I'm in a little world, I'm doing my thing, doing what I got to do, yada, 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 you know, you kind of forget that you're on the same team. So that's my marriage advice. And for kids advice, I don't know. I'm in the middle of terrible twos and teenage angst. Like my stepson's 15. He is just full on as bad as I was when I was 15. Cassian's 3.5. He's just destroying the house at every opportunity he gets. You know, so my advice is don't have a 15-year-old and a 3-year-old at the same time. But
check.
Nailed it. All right. Yeah. Good job. but yeah, I don't know. Is saying enjoy it too corny, you know, like,
I think a lot of the things like communication, the things that are stereotypical or the things that are cliche are often cliches for a reason. So I would say, no, enjoy it is good advice because it's hard to forget or it's easy to forget to do that.
Yeah. Like Cassian's just a monster now. Well, you know, the iPhone has like, you know, photo memories come up from whatever of this and that. And just like, oh, Cassian used to be one and he would only sleep in his little swing and never sleep for 18 months. And that kind of sucked, but it was really, really cute, you know? And then Cassian was a little blob. I guess I have clips on Twitch, which is cool, of like Cassian sitting in my lap and throwing up the first time I held him, you know, and Cassian, I don't know, he was on my lap and something happened in the game and he just let out like a, and it was just like, me too, man. And it was just funny. I don't know, you know, so having these little clips is kind of cute, but yeah. And now he's just a dude who just walks around and terrorizes everything. So it just goes quick. And I don't know. I really enjoyed the phases though. I really enjoyed watching him go from each phase and step and, you know, from crawling to walking to talking to now he's almost reading. Like he's watching like Alpha Blocks on TV or whatever. And he just decided to read like a week ago. He just looked at a word, which is like, whoa, ah, whoa, wow. Just like, what the hell are you going to read? You know, what's going on?
Who taught you this?
Right. What's, I didn't teach you that. You teach you that. I teach you that. But yeah, it's really, really cool. It's definitely challenging and stressful, but it is really cool.
All right, last one before we go. When this episode also airs in the future,
No.
The NBA Finals are going to be concluded. Ooh. Knicks got game one. Are we calling Knicks in 4, 5, 6, or 7?
I'll say Knicks in 7. I am from New York. It's funny. I play basketball twice a week. I'm not a huge like, NBA fan. Like, obviously, I root for the Knicks. If I had a team, it would be the Knicks. I haven't watched don't know if I watched any Knicks games yet, honestly. I watched some of the Cleveland, not the Cleveland, I don't know what I watched. I don't know. I was on one of the events with Corey or whatever. We were watching the game. We had a few drinks too. I forgot. But I watched a few games. I'm not a huge basketball fan. But I am rooting for the Knicks, obviously. You know, it would nice to see someone in Madison Square Garden win something. That'd be really great.
And I know hockey is your true passion. Who do you like in the Stanley Cup playoffs between the Golden Knights and the Avalanche?
I mean, I am absolutely stunned. It's the Golden Knights and the Hurricanes. I am stunned the Avalanche aren't in the finals because they were the best team in the league by such a wide margin. It was like comical. It was just like, they're much better than everyone by such a wide margin. They're going to win the cup this year. And they got swept, which is just unbelievable. Hockey's the best sport. You never know what's going to happen. But yeah, I'll take Carolina in six. Vegas is like the bad guy. They've gone from being like the darlings to the bad guy. They just like abuse every salary cap thing they can, buy all the good players, Sin City. So yeah, Carolina in six.
And when are the Rangers getting back to the cup?
Oh my God. I don't know. I can talk for hours with the Rangers, but I don't, if you're listening, you're not like a huge hockey fan. The Rangers went from being 2 years ago, the best team in the league, best record in the league, was one win away from the cup finals, lost to the team that won in the playoffs. So like a phenomenal run, team's looking great, pretty young team, to the year next year being like the third worst team in the league. They traded off half their players. They blew the whole team up. Like I've never seen such an implosion in professional sports in my entire life. And now the team is just utter dog water. So I don't know. The Rangers got a long way to go. Just inexplicable.
You decided, Ben, to go from like uplifting relationship, parenting talk to dragging Jim through the NHL mud. Thank you so much for joining us. If there happens to be anybody out there who does not know where to find you and your content, where can they go?
Yeah, so I'm Jim Davis MTG on YouTube, on Twitch, Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram. Bronson Smith, of course, is on YouTube on a separate channel. That's my draft channel. My Riftbound channel is Arcane Academy on YouTube. And yeah, stop by, say hi, and see if anything's cool.
Really appreciate you taking the time. This was great.
Cool. Yeah, I want to thank you guys. I'm happy to be on the show because I freaking love the show. Like I mentioned before, like I don't consume as Magic content. You know, obviously, understandably, I do Magic 50 hours a week. You know, when it's time to take some rest and relaxation, usually I'll watch some StarCraft or something else. You know, but
leave work at work, right?
Right, exactly. But of the few pieces of Magic content I do consume, you guys are it. You know, if I have a drive, I'm Bronson Mithergang, and I'm still in platinum. Let's get a little limited boys and see what's going on over there and find out how to figure out what the hell I'm doing here. So y'all are great. And I'm very happy to be on
that. I mean, just means the world. Truly going to be carrying that when I have my sleepless nights with my daughter while this is airing. So thank you.
Thank you to Salty Pretzels, as always, for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our episode backlog, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, our merch, our Patreon page, all of that available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.